Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Soleri Report. I'm here with, I don't know whether to call you Dr. or Reverend Franklin Sanders. Franklin Sanders is a man who needs no introduction on the Soleri Report. If you have not been through the best of the precious metals Soleri reports, market reports, you're in for a treat. And I asked Franklin for the second quarter wrap-up theme if he would write something called Gold and Silver, Defending Family Wealth and Sovereignty for 5,000 Years. For those of you, many people listening to this are subscribers to his wonderful newsletter, Money Changer. It's one of my favorites in the world. And many of you have done business with his precious metals dealership now in his son's capable hands, Volunteer Metals in Tennessee. And oh my God, Franklin, you can now sell in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can now buy from you.
It's the first of June.
I know. That's amazing. Long time coming. Anyway, but Franklin knows more about gold and silver and precious metals than just about any person on the planet. And it's been wonderful to be in cahoots with him for many years. He knows a lot about farming, too, because he's got a wonderful farm in Middle Tennessee. And he moved out from Memphis many years ago, and he and his family taught themselves farming. And so he understands food, he understands community, he understands a lot about money and investments, but there's nobody better on precious metals. So, Franklin, thank you for joining me on the Soleri Report, and thank you for writing this magnificent piece. It's up on the web presentation. We're going to walk through the outline, but I know this was a tremendous amount of work.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. I really enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, it's a good one. This wrap up is you can see it at the web presentation, but you'll see it when it comes out in PDF and hard copy. It's just a treasure chest of how to get going using gold and silver. And again, lots of links to the best of the precious metals and your website, The Money Changer, which is a great resource. So anything else in your background you want me to mention? You have some great books that you wrote about learning how to farm.
Right. Three volumes of it, At Home in Dogwood Mudhole.
Yeah.
We did it the hard way. We killed a lot of things before we got it right. But
so,
that's the way you have to do it.
I just do want to say that I've been to your farm many, many times, and your town is called Dogwood Mudhole. That's not a... Right?
No, I didn't make that up. There's really a place there.
Yeah, I know. I know. I've seen the sign many times. Okay, so let's just walk through the outline. So... there were a series of materials I wanted you to collect up, and I want to just quickly walk through the outline, mention each part, and ask you why you wrote it. So obviously there's an introduction, and then you have a section called Beats Me, What is the Dollar, which explains that the dollar is in trouble, which I think everybody listening to this already knows. And if you don't know it, you certainly feel it in the inflation of prices. So how's inflation where you are? How's inflation doing in Dogwood Mudhole?
Oh, gosh, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. I don't know how people make it. I really don't. That, by the way, that Beats Me, What is a Dollar, is supposed to point out what a legal muddle the definition of a dollar is in. And right. So it's a mess that Congress has made.
Really... funny, I don't know if you realize this, but Jerome Powell has been very clear that if he's going to do a CBDC, he needs authorizing legislation. And I think one of the reasons he wants authorizing legislation is because from a legal standpoint, they're on such weak ground anyway now.
Yes.
they got no place to go, but they got to get a legislation. So, and it's funny because reading What is a Dollar is, I started to realize, this is much worse than I thought. It's much more complicated than I thought, and it's still worse than I thought. We have a section I asked you to write called Terms and Presuppositions. Why don't you just quickly describe that?
Well, there are a lot of terms that we use that people are just not familiar with, like credit and debt. You know, people don't necessarily realize that credit and debt are one is the inverse of the other. They're the same thing. But you have to understand certain things before you try to read what I've written. And by that, I mean, I have a presupposition that there are only two types two theories of money. One theory is that you trade something of value for something of value, which I call a barter theory. The other one is that money is just a social construct. Whatever somebody says, it is money is money. And of course, the person who gets to a point, whatever is money, happens to be the person who issues it usually. So that since Aristotle's time, there have only been those two theories of money. Right. So you have to understand that, you know, when people, when you talk to people about gold and silver money, or you talk to them about money, economists want to get off on all these byways and so forth. But look, let's just take the simple principle. Are you going to give somebody value for value when you trade? Or are you going to give something, nothing for something? And that's exactly what the monetary system that we have is.
Well, what the oil producers are saying is we want something for something. We don't want nothing for something anymore. That's it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
They've brought us back to simple concepts. Very important one, the fourth, is why silver? And you were the person who really got me to understand the importance of silver. And it's funny because as silver goes down, it's having a terrible year. I just keep buying more. It's, I think the gold-silver ratio is like 100.
It's 90. It's at 90. Yeah. It's very, very high. Very rare to see this.
When was it ever that high before?
Well, it went to 100 to 1 in 1941, and then again in 1991. Uh-huh. And then in 2020, for just about 4 days, it went up to 125, which is a 5,200-year high.
Wow.
5,200-year high.
Yeah.
But, you know, what? One of the things that I think we have to pay attention to in the world is, let's use what's organic. Let's use what has worked already, because right. it's grown up because it works. And bimetallism is one of those things, a system where both silver and gold are money. And the reason for that is, if you got that system, then it can't go dishonest on you, because an ounce of gold is valued in ounces of silver, and an ounce of silver is valued in gold. And so right. there's a cross check there against each other. Once you introduce paper money into the system and you say, well, the dollar is backed by so many ounces of gold, then everything changes. That's the camel's nose under the tent.
Right.
And that's the end of it. So they got silver out of the system effectively in the 1870s. They demonetized silver. And from that, it was only a short period of time, it was about 50 years, until they got gold out of the system too.
Right.
So from about 1873 to about 1933, they demonetized silver and then they got rid of gold.
So one of the things that's important to understand is silver, for small transactions, silver is much better than gold.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you're doing everyday transactions, you want silver. The other thing you helped me to understand was when gold was confiscated in the 30s, it was really only confiscated from the banks, number one, not from households. But most of family wealth at that time was in gold.
Right, a lot of it.
And you're always saying, you know, they're never going to confiscate gold now because all the wealth's in the 401ks and IRAs, that's where the money is, you know. So if they do the same thing in 33 and 30, you know, that they did in 33, they're going to go where the money is.
Right.
So because exactly. So much of it has been shifted out of family control to central control. And that's a lot of the problems that we're, or that's one of the causes of the problems we're facing. Okay. So the next part we're going to come back to, because this is one of the most important parts, a great interview you did on the importance of abolishing sales tax on gold and silver and other things states can do to make gold and silver liquid.
And there's a long list in there. That interview with Stephen Gleason is fabulous. I mean, the work that they've done is fabulous. We've been trying in Tennessee since 2010 to get rid of the sales tax. And it was really the effort of his group that accomplished that this year. So, wow. And it, you know, it's not the kind of thing you do in 1 year. And there's a whole shopping list of things there that we all ought to aim to get our states to do. And right. not the least of which is they need to put some of their reserves into silver and gold, and they need to back their pension funds with gold. It doesn't matter if it's only a little bit. Right. You know, if it's
they need to get going.
They need to get going. That's exactly right.
You need to build the pipeline. Okay, we'll come back to that. The next one, because you were the one who invented and created the silver and gold payment calculator, and then I'm the one who's trying to keep it up on the internet. And so a lot of people are still reluctant to use it. So you've written a great piece called How to Barter with Gold and Silver Coins.
Yes.
It helps you understand how to do it and how to get going.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of people are intimidated by the math. And that's one of the reasons we put up the website, Silver and Gold and Money, you and I together, because there you can just go and punch in a dollar amount or a euro amount or British pound amount, and it'll tell you how to pay that amount in gold or silver or both.
Right.
But the math is not that hard. You know, once you understand a few simple things, then you can do the calculations yourself. Yeah. And that's what I want people to do, you know, because otherwise, if you're ignorant, somebody's going to cheat you down the line.
Right. Another one I asked you to put in is, where's the depository you can trust?
Right. There are not many. and you know, depositories, there are some depositories that I just wouldn't use because right. I've had experience with them. And I know that, you know, they get your stuff and then they think it's their stuff and they think they can go at their speed and so forth. But that's the list of depositories we have visited personally, or we have seen, we know the companies behind them. And there's even one there in Canada. So we know that these people can be trusted.
Right. Another favorite, how not to lose money on silver and gold, including the money changers' 10 commandments for buying gold and silver.
Well, people make, you know, there are a lot of mistakes that you make. The problem is that it's gold and silver is an opaque market. I mean, there's just not, most people don't know anything about it. And right. so consequently, there people take advantage of it. You know, they try to sell you things that are very, very expensive and overpriced. Another problem is, you know, people need to understand that when you buy silver and gold, you're buying insurance.
Right.
And if you don't die at the end of the year, you don't go to your insurance agent and pound on his desk and say, I want my money back. I didn't die this year. Well, of course. you were paying for insurance. So
right.
it doesn't pay to buy a core position in gold or silver and then look at the price of it every day.
Yeah.
That just doesn't make sense. Another thing is, a corollary of that is you can't put 3 month money into gold or silver. And right. the reason is there's a wide spread between buy and sell. And that has to be because it's not just electronically handled. It's physically handled. It has to be stored. It has to be insured. All of that, it has to be shipped. So all that goes to the cost of it. So there's about a 7.5 to 10, maybe 13% spread between buy and sell. So that means that gold or silver has to go up 7.5 to 13% before you break even. And to expect a move like that in 3 months or 6 months or even a year is a big mistake. You know, I mean,
right.
I had somebody ask me the other day, he said, look, we're going to build a house. We sold our house. I've got all this money in the bank. I'm really nervous about that money in the bank. And that's a comment I hear every day, 4 or 5 times. I'm really nervous about this money in the bank. What should I do with it? I said, well, I just can't tell you to put it into gold right. or silver because you're going to need the money. And I don't know what happens if it goes down.
Right. Exactly.
And then you're going to be in worse shape than you are now.
Right.
So as long as we live in this world with these, it's not just a dual monetary system. It's a triple monetary system. As long as we live in this world, you just have to allow for those transaction costs. And you have to remember, this is a core position. I have this position as insurance, and I'm not going to trade in and out of it every day.
Right. Okay. Sovereign versus global, a shopping list for your state legislators. This is one near and dear to my heart because this is telling people, here's how they go to their state legislators. Here's what they ask for. So we'll come back to that after we go through the sort of what's happening. But that one's a big one, and I know you worked hard on that.
Right. It's a big one, and I'm still working hard on it. Justin and I sat down yesterday, and both of us are dissatisfied with the letter that we sent to the senator. And we're trying to work up a shopping list that has everything we want in it, but with a list of bullet points. Because, right, you know, when you say to somebody, well, here's what we need to do for farming. Well, you get in the weeds really fast because you say, right, well, we need to remove this berry and that berry. You got to do this and that and the other. And so what we need is just a bullet point shopping list for the legislator so that he can go deeper into it to understand it. But right, to get an overview, he needs to see that what we're facing, it's not just one crisis. We're really facing, I mean, it's not this crisis and that crisis, one crisis. And what's happened is, and it's your terminology, we've gone global and lost our sovereignty in the process.
Right.
And that means our individual sovereignty. So,
and we can trade and operate globally with sovereignty. There's no,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Globalism doesn't have to mean loss of sovereignty. In fact, globalism will be far more successful if we don't lose sovereignty.
Right. Well, so what we need, you know, we're looking at areas and you pointed out these areas and I agree with you. The first one is food.
Right.
I mean, I'm really concerned about the availability of food. And then I see what's going on in Holland. You know about this better than I do, where they're trying to put Dutch farmers out of business. Completely put them out of business. Same thing's going on in Norway, by the way. Right. And the excuse is climate change. It's completely ridiculous. But, you know, they tell you that cows produce all this CO2. Well, you know that termites produce about 18, I think it's 180 times as much carbon dioxide as cows do.
Really?
What are they going to do?
Well, I'll tell you something. I just said this to somebody yesterday. I sit up here on the Isomer on the North Sea, and every day, I don't know if it's the Dutch Air Force or NATO or both, they're sending F-35 type jet fighters across constantly. And I know whatever they're doing, they're using a lot more than the cows. And nobody's got a problem with them. You know, the corporate jets have been excused from the green aviation tax, and there's an exception for yachts as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if you look at how these guys live their life, they have no concern about climate change personally.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Right. So you also, there's a series of appendix that list the gold and silver coins and other things. But anyway, it's all up on the web presentation at gold.slayer.com. Make sure you're logged into the website before you click over. But it's a wealth of information. We're also going to have a piece that we're not going to talk today, specifically designed for European subscribers about what's going on in Europe. And of course, what's going on in Europe, Franklin, is there's no push to create retail liquidity with gold and silver like there is in the United States. So there's a real divergence between the U.S. and Europe. Asia's pushing for more retail liquidity. The U.S. is pushing for more retail liquidity. Europe's more liquid in the central banking system at the wholesale level, but not at the retail levels.
Right.
But anyway, a conversation for another day. Things are changing in the United States, and the push is on to make gold and silver liquid. So why don't you know, the first thing I wanted to do with this special report, Franklin, is to update people on what's really going on at the state level, because I think it's big.
Well, you know, with Tennessee this year, there are 42 states that have removed the sales tax on gold and silver. So
that's great.
It's huge. It's enormous. There are also efforts. Only, I think, two states have done this so far. But there are efforts to get states to declare gold and silver legal tender. And I think this is the best wedge that we've got right now, because states have the authority under Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution to declare what is a legal tender in their state.
Right.
And there's nothing to prevent them from doing that. It doesn't mean that everybody has to use gold and silver. It means they can use it if they want, but it becomes a legal tender. And once you do that, then there's a big step up in acceptability of gold and silver. And I'll tell you what I think is, I think that that COVID has shown that the Americans are divided into roughly three parts. There are a third of the people will do whatever they're told to do, whatever the government tells them to do. They'll do it. They'll swallow any story that the government tells. There's another third that's always kind of wavering, and they'll go whichever way it seems to them that most people are going, or the person who's screaming the loudest is going. And then there's a third of the people, I believe, who have now drawn a line in the sand and realized the government is at war against us. They are at war against us, and they are literally trying to kill us. And right. So we have to oppose it. We have no choice but to oppose it. So right. I think that's the greatest development in the last 60 years in freedom, because people understand this is personal. I have to do it. Nobody can go do it for me. I have to do it myself.
Right. It's not a matter of voting in another president. It's
no.
Right.
Yeah, right. They understand it's right here where I live. It's right here on my sidewalk. That's where I have to do this. And so we've got that going for us. A lot of the legislative work has been done, but there's some laws that need to be removed, laws that put barriers in trading in gold and silver. We need some laws need to be kind of confirmed or strengthened, like your ability to write gold or silver clause contracts.
Right.
That's a contract that calls for specific payment in gold or silver, some specific tender. And those are legal already. I mean, that's perfectly legal now, but you don't want to have a gold clause contract that specifies payment in gold and go into court to have to enforce it and let the judge say, oh, well, he can pay you paper dollars instead of gold.
Right.
That's so we need to have that specific performance strengthened. We need to remove the capital gains tax on gold and silver. Now Tennessee doesn't have an income tax, so this doesn't affect us. But if you have an income tax, most states follow the federal government.
Right.
And the federal government says that if you have a $50 gold coin, and you sell that, you bought that $50 gold coin for 1,000 paper dollars, and you sell it for 200 for 1,200 paper dollars, you have a $1,200 gain.
$200 gain.
Right. But you have $200 gain.
Yeah.
Actually, you have a loss. All your paper dollars have lost. That's right. The reason it's not that the gold's risen, it's that the paper money's gone down. But they want to charge you capital gains tax on that. And some states have removed that. I think notably Nevada or Utah has done that. But that's one of the barriers right there, because it's a lot of accounting for people to keep up with. Another thing that states need to do is, as we said, they need to buy gold and they need to put gold and silver in their reserves.
So let me ask you a question on this, because they have state reserves. A lot of states have rainy day funds and other kind of reserves. There's a remarkable amount that's sort of squirreled away in various pockets, but they also have big retirement funds. So there's theoretically a fair amount of money, some of which could be put into gold and silver. Now, if a state makes gold and silver legal tender, then you can use gold and silver to pay your taxes because it's legal tender, right?
Yep.
Okay. Now, if you look at the premium I have to pay, if I'm a state like Tennessee and I want to buy $1 billion worth of gold, I'm going to pay a premium. I'm not going to get it at melt value. But if I say to my citizens, you know something, you can pay your taxes and I'll give you a 5% discount if you pay with gold or silver.
Exactly.
Then you're going to get melt value prices and save yourself a huge amount of money.
Right. And right. then what that means is now you've got gold income.
Right.
So you can issue gold bonds.
Right.
And you can use the gold bonds to buy back cheaply all the paper bonds that you've issued by auctioning off the gold bonds for the paper bonds. You right. you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that way you could retire an enormous amount of debt cheaply by doing that. And all you would have to do is all the state has to do is have an income in gold and
right.
or gold and silver. And you can do that by having people pay taxes. Absolutely.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, if the U.S. comes apart, you can also issue currency just like currency.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's no reason that the state couldn't issue receipts right. against a billion-dollar pile of gold. Right. And, you know, they can issue those receipts in tiny amounts or, you know, small amounts, whatever is needed. But the important thing is that you would not have a hiatus where there's no money at all. Where people right. don't know what in the world to do.
So I want you to know, I think it was about 10 years ago, California, the last time they tried to issue script during a budget crisis, and everybody was happy to take it, except J.P. Morgan Chase wouldn't deal in it. And so they had to instead borrow the money from J.P. Morgan Chase at a huge and hideous, you know, interest payment. So I think one of the things every state has to grapple with is what banks are you letting into your business?
Right.
Right. You know, it's not going to be good if the gold and silver they collect goes into a New York Fed bank at, you know, holding the accounts for the state. Okay. So one of the things the state can do, and we've seen Texas do it, is start a depository.
Right. Texas has done that. And here's the good thing about the depository. The good thing about the depository is if the federal government comes in, the state is interposing itself between the federal government and the individual. And this is an idea behind trying to regain individual sovereignty is that one individual is too small to stand up against the federal government. A state right. is not too small.
Right.
A state is not. So right. That's the reason why we need a state depository and a state bank as well.
I agree. I think
going North back Dakota. To the shopping list. But a state bank, not a state bank that does business on Wall Street, but a state bank that does business with local banks and helps right. local banks.
That well, because makes it sense. That protects the local banks from the manipulations of the Fed cycle.
Right.
So that's what North Dakota's done. It's been phenomenally successful. So yeah. what I'm violently opposed to is creating government banks that then put all the local banks out of business. And can easily be controlled by the feds.
Right. And they would not be, they would not take personal accounts. I mean, in other words, they don't do business with the public. They only do business with banks. Exactly. Right. You know, why is it that all of this money in Tennessee is drained away to New York City? Why is
well,
that?
Well, there are two ways that every state in the United States is being drained. The first one, which is worse, is the talent. So a community spends 20 years raising and educating a strong, young, healthy person, and then they go to Wall Street or they go to Washington or they go to the military, and they help those organizations drain the community. You know, so you know, my whole shtick in the 90s about keeping equity in the local community is so that you have the financial opportunity for the young people so they can build real wealth staying on Main Street.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So we're shipping our human capital and our financial capital to Wall Street, and it's using us to basically, you know, we're financing the guys who are saying it's 2030 and you have no assets.
Right. And you're happy. Right. And you're going to be happy. Yeah. If we can keep that money in a local flow and make it available to local entrepreneurs, local farmers, local producers of everything, then what all of a sudden now you've got a way to finance your economy, your right. own economy, and you satisfy your own needs. I mean, your people's own needs. You remember that the U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates that about that every person in the United States spends about $2,400 a year on food and drink. Now, you know, you hear all these industrial farmers say we can't make a living, we have to be subsidized and so forth. Take $2,400 and multiply it by the number of people in your county, and you'll see this huge amount of cash that is draining out of your county every year. Why?
Right.
Because nobody locally is there to sell them the product. If you could just turn a part of that cash flow back into your own county, and I'm just talking about farmers and food.
Well, imagine if all the school and institutional funded by taxpayer food purchases were purchased locally.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, I told you when I was driving, I started to show you how the money worked locally. I would constantly find communities that were paying, you know, people working who are making $40,000 a year paying taxes, you know, say in their whole life they pay $100,000 in taxes. And they're paying Washington to do a function where they're paying a contractor $100 an hour to do something that could be shipped in, you know, by telecommuting to that community where they would love to do it for $25 plus healthcare. So here they're working their butt off, making $45,000, paying the taxes so somebody can get paid $100 to do something they could do and they would love to do. And it would be, you know, it would be economically good for them. So if I mean, the waste in the system is beyond belief. I mean, it's amazing it's still working. But, you know, I think the Russians have just said very clearly they're not going to finance it anymore.
Right.
Okay, so what else can we ask so I want to bring this out. You've made it clear, but I want to bring it out again. There is clearly a relationship between food and currency. We've got to get them both right. Currency, if the food isn't there, isn't going to work. And food without without a way to trade in an honest way, you know, without liquid financial markets is not going to work. So you need both the money and the food to work together.
Right. But that's one of the things that you got to take to your legislature to say, look, we've got to take these barriers out. Just get out of the way. Just let the state get out of the way of these people. And I promise you, they'll come. The people are there who want to do the farming, who can do it, and they can do it to scale.
Right.
So the main thing is just get out of the way. The state needs to remove regulations again. You know, they treat milk like it was heroin, you know, raw milk. They need to get out of the way of that because it can be a huge cash flow operation for a farmer who can really make a good living out of it. The same thing about processed foods. The money, you know, the money is the profit on an item is sort of stacked, and each person who handles it again and processes it takes a part of the final value. So if a farmer can make sausage or baked goods or jellies or jams or juice, whatever it might be, on his own place, then he captures more of those profits, which means he makes a better living, which means more people are going to go into that business.
Right.
More people are going to farm. So, and that's more food. And so we're not at the situation. We're not in the monoculture situation that we're in now, where agriculture has been centralized. Agriculture has been industrialized. These people think that crop rotation is growing soybeans one year and corn the next year.
Right.
That's not crop rotation. So that all of that, as you know, is vulnerable. Any monoculture is vulnerable to collapse. And now this year we're facing those problems where diesel prices have gone up and chemical prices have gone up and farmers can't make it. They can't do it.
Do you remember when I started to stick my nose into the food stamp program?
Yeah,
there was some woman in Florida during the financial crisis who she'd lost her job, clearly very competent, very productive, lost her job, couldn't get another one because of the financial crisis and ended up on food stamps. And she ended up calling the tech support. She had some problem and discovered that she was talking to somebody in Asia who was working for JPMorgan Chase. And she started to, you know, and if she, you know, if she as an American was doing that job, then she wouldn't need to draw on unemployment insurance and food stamps. And she said, this is insane. Why can't I do this job? You know, why are we shipping it to the other side of the world and giving JP Morgan Chase what is clearly a big markup to do this? So she started to squawk. Anyway, I started to look into the food stamp program. And sure enough, you were shipping all this work through JP Morgan Chase out of the country. They had, I think, 39 states. And it gets even better. If you look at Tennessee, I think at that time there was about 15 to 20% of the people in the state who were getting food stamps, while huge amounts of the world's finest farmland is lying fallow. And all the, a couple farmers in my county are being busted by regulators for making food.
Yeah.
You're like, what? How, you know, so, and the food at Walmart was being trucked in from thousands. You had all this food coming in from South America being trucked thousands and thousands of miles.
Right.
The whole thing made absolutely no economic sense, particularly if you integrated healthcare costs.
Yeah.
Right. So if you look at the whole thing on a combined budget, you're spending far more money than you need to engineer a centrally controlled farming system.
Right.
It's political.
Well, there's a statistic, and Justin and I were talking about this yesterday, and I can't remember exactly what it is, but 50 years ago, all the food that you ate came from within 100 miles of where you lived.
Right.
And today, the average food travels something like 1,200 miles. I'm not sure about those statistics, so don't, you know.
Right.
But it's that big a spread. And just think about not only the inefficiencies, but the cost that introduced and the fragility that introduces into the system.
Unbelievable.
It's incredible. I mean, why would anybody want a system like that? It makes no sense at all.
Oh, if I'm Mr. Global and I want complete control.
Oh, well,
it's not enough to control the financial transaction grid. I got to control the food.
Right.
You know, right. It's two parts of the coin. Now, you know, I spent a huge amount of time in the 90s trying to use databases to map out and make accessible how money worked in places on the federal budget, on the government money. And so I got into cahoots with you sometime in the early 2000s, and you were complaining about your neighbors not going along with these ideas of building local economies. So I printed out from one of the websites all of the federal money that I could find in both Tennessee and in your county.
Yeah.
And you, I'll never forget, as one of the most amazing moments, you were like, as Joseph Farrell would say, you were gobsmacked, I would say. So would you describe what happened?
Well, you know, there is that what the website was, not Environmental Working Group or somebody, but they had.
So it was the agriculture. I printed out the agriculture subsidies, but I also printed out Eagle Eye that shows all the federal monies, both contracts and subsidies for Tennessee.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that's interesting about this is the 80-20 rule applies. In fact, it's more like the 90-10 rule, that 20% of the farmers get 80% of the subsidies.
Right.
It's very, very, very much centralized. Well, you know, after we did that, I went on and did a study of just the 15 southern states, but I think it's pretty much applicable everywhere, to see how much income people were getting from government. And what it shows is that half of the people take their income from government.
Right.
Half of the people.
Let me make this worse. Not only half of the people, but if you look at another 20 to 25% of the people, they're doing the retail that services the people who get their money from the government.
Right.
So make that 75%.
That's exactly right.
Right.
And when you start digging into the money that comes into a state, it is absolutely astounding. The fat that the federal government pays for, it is just absolutely astounding. I mean, we've got an elephant rescue program grant from the federal government in Tennessee. Now, that's right. Great. If you want to rescue elephants, that's fine. But I prefer people do it on their own dime. Really. and if there's $40,000 or $80,000 of that buried in the budget, what else is in there? How many other courses?
Unbelievable. I just printed out the NDAA for 2023. It's over 2,000 pages. Oh, so last time I did that was when they took over Fannie and Freddie, because I know this one has more pork. The Biden administration asked for $813 billion, and Congress gave them, I think, $857 billion. It's almost $50 billion more than the administration asked for. I don't know if you know this. A plane just crashed, I think, in Greece on the way to Bangladesh from the Ukraine. And filled with munitions.
Really?
So I keep telling everybody, all that money going to Ukraine, you know, it's a stopover. That's a layover. Ukraine is a layover. This is going global.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're pumping out huge amounts of money and huge amounts of weapons. So I would love to get the flight map out of Ukraine.
Well, you know, when they can't figure out what else to do, they start a war.
Right.
You know, that's the way it works.
And another reason to own gold and silver. So what are the states that have been leading the way on this? So Texas is one, North Dakota's one, yeah. Utah's one. Who else? Tennessee's now getting in the game. Who else is, who are the states who are leading this?
Well, there's some states that aren't doing anything. You know, right. I mean, there's some that have removed the sales tax, but haven't really done anything else on that list of things that we'd like to see done. And that's, I think it, these things need to be suggested to legislators because it doesn't occur. You know, a fellow with just average experience in life, it will not occur to him, hey, the state ought to buy $1 billion worth of gold and put it in our reserve fund. He's just not going to think of that.
So here's what I want everybody to do. Go to the web presentation, print out that section where we give you a list of things that the legislator can do. You can slap a letter on it and send it to them, or you can use it to convert into your own letter, say it in your own way. But that is a shopping list for your state legislators, and you can make all the difference in communicating with them about it.
And they need to be encouraged to work with other states. Because, you know, states make compacts. They don't call them treaties. They call them compacts, but that's what they are, treaties, to work with each other on these things. And so it would be very good if states would get together and make those compacts on all of those things that's in that list.
Right.
But as far as states, you were asking, I think the Sound Money Defense League is working in various states, but the big thing at the beginning, the big thing has been to get rid of the sales tax. And that's just about finished. And so now it's time to move on to other things. But the thing that concerns me is I think there's a crisis coming. I think there's a monetary and financial crisis coming.
So I'm going to disagree with you because I think we are in a monetary and financial crisis. Why everybody keeps saying it's coming? It's here.
Yeah.
I mean, In 2000, when I moved to Tennessee, Bolivar, Tennessee, created a place on municipal land where people could have car sales because they could sell their goods out of their car because they didn't have a home, so they couldn't have a yard sale.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you know what I mean? So I think we're, you know, when that was 2000, I think we're in an emergency now. I think, you know, there are people, millions of people dying in the U.S. and all over the world from the destruction of their small businesses, from being poisoned, from, you know, on and on and on.
Well, I stand corrected.
Okay.
The crisis is here. But I think that, you know, if half of the people, well, it's actually, it probably is half of the people take their living from the federal government because so much the Fed subsidizes state governments to such a great extent. But the fact is that if there's any interruption of those payments, if the dollar suddenly is subject to severe inflation, if the Fed, there are a bunch of things that could go wrong with the way the Fed finances. I mean,
So the Fed and the Treasury together can just basically print paper. Right.
Right.
And so the likely thing is not that the payments are going to stop, but that eggs are going to go up 33% in a year, which is what has already just happened. Right.
And so the payments won't buy anything.
Right.
Right. And that's the process that we're in now. And as that goes forward and it gets worse, people are going to look for alternatives. They're going to look for alternatives. And this, I think the state's going to need alternatives too, because how's the state going to pay policemen? How's the state going to pay all right. of these folks that they pay if they have, if the money is no good?
Right.
I mean, there has to be some sort of, they have to have something they can fall back on. And so I think that people's ears are opening up.
Yes.
I think they're going to be much readier to hear.
So it's interesting. You look at Tennessee, and Tennessee has, relative to most states, a good government bureaucracy, in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
They have kept their debt low. They balance their budget every year. They have a reasonably sized reserve fund, and their pension funds are almost fully funded.
Yeah.
And they're exceptionally strong on the Second Amendment.
Yes.
And, of course, everybody's moving to Tennessee. Tennessee's like Florida.
Tell them to stop.
I know. That's what everybody says. Please, everybody at Lewis County says, don't tell anybody how much you love Lewis County because there are more people coming. Don't stop. And I don't know if I told you this. We had a couple of real estate developers try to do a creative thing in Hardeman County. It kind of fizzled out. And right after it fizzled out, somebody wrote an article saying the 10 worst communities in Tennessee, and Hickory Valley was one of them. And everybody in Hickory Valley was like, yes, fabulous. Nobody's going to come here. Anyway, but in 2020, Nashville was the number one drop-off point for one-way U-Haulers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, so what I'm saying is if Tennessee issued a currency, given that track record, you know,
I'd rather have that than Federal Reserve notes.
I would much rather have that Federal Reserve. The U.S. government has broken their own financial management laws flagrantly and criminally since 1998 at a minimum, and it's probably before then, but we can document all of that. I mean, Tennessee, is, as far as I know, has obeyed their laws. I don't think they're perfect. Nobody is. It's the real world. But if you look at their financial management record versus the federal government's, there's just no comparison. So yeah. I think the people of Tennessee would trust Tennessee paper or script faster than they would certainly if they could use gold and silver as legal tender as well. You're talking about a reasonably strong issuing authority, you know, but I get back to the whole point. The whole point is not to have a great financial system. The point is to have a financial transaction grid that will support sovereign individuals and businesses. I mean, right. We need the federal government not to be free to destroy our business just because they want to take our land or take our market share.
Right.
That's what's been happening.
Well, you know, another thing that we've talked about, another thing that concerns people, and I hear this every day. I mean, every day somebody calls me up three or four times, I'll hear in the day, listen, I've got this money in the bank. I don't trust it anymore. And you need analog assets because since January, the authorities have proven that you can't trust digital assets that they have control of, because they will cut you off politically, whether you're the central bank of Russia or whether you're anti-COVID protesters in Canada. They can cut you off. And so central bank digital currencies are that in spades.
Right.
Because people have to realize the way they've been presented now, there may be some exceptions to this, but the way they've been presented is you will have an individual account with the central bank.
And they can turn it on and shut it off whenever they want.
And you know as well as I do, if they have the power to do it, they'll do it.
Yeah.
Do it. So we need analog assets, analog financial assets, which is silver and gold, that we can use. And I think one of the things that's overlooked is we talk about depositories, and I think that's a good thing. But the largest depository of gold and silver in the state of Tennessee is held in the hands of the people. I don't know where it is. I can't go. Nobody can go seize it because nobody knows where it is.
Well, they can seize it, but it's a huge job.
Yeah. If they put,
especially in a state where there are that many guns.
That's exactly right. So what I'm saying is if you can give an incentive to pull that out, like paying taxes in gold or silver, this guy, if you can give an incentive or the incentive of having to do business, having to have some kind of money to do business with, in that case, it's going to come out. It will come out of hiding. So, I'm encouraged when I think about that, that there are a lot of people who've seen this coming for years and have prepared for it.
So one of the things you did many years ago is you tried to start a gold and silver bank. And I know the power of this comes when, if you can get enough of these steps going, people can start gold and silver banks, or current community banks can trade in gold and silver. I mean, you go to Switzerland, the Canton banks have always been able to trade in gold and silver. So, a local community bank in America can be the equivalent of a Canton bank and trade in gold and silver. You get a gold and silver bank. And what you and I always wanted was a debit card where we could just, I remember when we first, for a while when James Turk was in control of gold money, we both recommended it and used it and had clients use it, but they were working on a debit card and we couldn't wait for that because we could just, keep all our money in gold and go around and, and transact at a retail level, no problem, using our debit card. And of course, that got shut down.
Right. Well, what got shut down was the account to account transfer.
Right.
Because, I remember when I first heard about what Jim Turk was doing with gold money, and I took a deep breath and I thought, if he gets away with this in 2 years, he could put fiat money to flight around the world. Because why would anybody not use gold or silver if you can transact business with other people? There's no inconvenience to it.
So when they started, I was on the phone with someone who was doing a consulting job for me, and they were doing some research and writing a piece for the Salier Report. And they told me they got a gold money account. And I said, really, what's your account handle? They told me, and they said, now, how are you going to pay me for this? And I said, it's already in your gold money account. I just transferred it from mine, and it's sitting in your gold money account. I paid you in gold. And there was like this magic moment, and he said, wow. Anyway, but that was great when we could do that.
Right.
That was great. But well, you're right. There would have been a giant sucking sound into gold money.
Right. Well, there are people who make the promise or the offer that they have a credit card that can be, or a debit card that can be charged to your gold. And most of those are very, very clumsy, and they're not really what they claim.
Right.
There is one fellow who is working on something, won't be ready for probably for a year, that will enable you with a debit card to charge something in paper dollars, and then it'll be converted and charged in to your gold or silver deposit with him. And that's what we need. And that's why we need gold and silver banks. We need local gold and silver banks, which is another thing to ask your legislator for. These are just deposit banks. These are not going to be, we make loan banks or any of that sort. There's just deposit banks where they take deposits and make payouts for you. And, like cash your gold and silver check.
Well, but imagine this, if you had a state bank combined with a state depository and you had access to the National Guard and the militias to protect it so it's secure, and you're plugged into the sheriff's associations. So the state bank, imagine the state bank can do paper money but can also do gold and silver, and it's got the depository right there. It's only a wholesale bank to all the local banks, but the local banks can also deal in gold and silver, and the state will treat gold and silver as legal tender. And the way they build up their reserves is by giving you a discount on your taxes if you pay in gold and silver.
Right.
I mean, that could be a pretty, you're talking about a state that could not only rebuild its finances, but it could rebuild its culture.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Because people start looking to each other in their own communities to make their living and to do business with. It's a complete change of mindset. Yeah.
Well, there's something else. There's something else. And I'm going to take the long way around on this one. You know, my theory of everything is that no matter what community you're in or no matter what company or enterprise, 10% of the people are net energy plus. They give more energy than they take. 80% are sort of net energy neutral. They kind of follow around who's ever in charge. And 10% are what I call slugs. They're always looking to, you know, free ride. Yeah. And right now, those people are in charge. So the 80% are following the slugs. So it feels like everybody and everything's getting drained. And the problem in the system is that that 10% is trying to keep everything going and it's exhausting, right? Yeah. You know, so you got the high performance people and they're basically being just, you know, drained right into the ground. Now, here's what I discovered. I arrived when I went to work at FHA in the government in 89. I arrived and it took me, I don't know, it took me about a week to figure out, okay, the 10% slugs are in control. You know, I got 7,000 people working for me and they're all reporting to the slugs. So I got the 80% followers reporting the slugs and the 10% are drained. And I figured out, and they said, oh, it's going to take years to clean this place up. I said, really? I don't think so. It took me about a month to figure out, okay, who are the 10% high performance people? So suddenly, bam, you put them in charge and you say, my job is to protect you. You know, so if you get stuck, you come and I'll support you. Took another 3 months for the 80% to start following the high productive people. And my job was to keep the slugs in the corner. So our favorite thing was we used to call it Tundra Patrol. If they misbehaved, we'd detail them to the Alaska office. You know, and that was Tundra Patrol. How you get rid of one of the slugs. Anyway, but it literally, as soon as the 80% understood, okay, the high performance people are in charge, bam, suddenly the whole organization, everything was working and everybody was like, I thought it would take years. What happened? It was so, frankly, when I tell you, it was so simple because 90% of the people there, you know, were perfectly capable of being excellent and doing their job. You know, but unfortunately, I had to put the Black Budget Boys in the corner, and you could tell that's why I turned out to be not very popular. Anyway, when at one point the Clinton administration called and asked if I would come back in as the FHA commissioner, and one of my colleagues said, that'd be great. Then you could be fired by both the Republicans and the Democrats. Anyway, anything else you want to talk about what you ask your legislators for?
Well, I'm concerned about energy too. Right. And I think, you know, the reason that we've got a problem, the major reason that we've got this problem is the federal government. The problem with gasoline oil prices is the federal government, because they're trying to apply their green agenda, their war on fossil fuels, if you will. And I think one of the things that our state legislatures can do is try to secure in our state energy. And right. I'm not sure what they can do. It depends on what your state. I mean, if you live in Louisiana, it's a lot different from living in Tennessee, right. Where we don't have oil wells, you know. But you can do that through compacts with other states. That's one of the things that really, really bothers me, because you can't have an industrial society without energy.
And productive energy.
Right.
Economically efficient energy.
Right. And people who think that solar and wind are the solution just simply don't know the facts. There's no way that they can do that. And if you want a lesson in it, just put a solar system on your own house and work it for 6 months and see what it's like, because it's not the same thing as being hooked up to that grid. I'll tell you, it's not.
So I don't know if you saw this. Did you see Massey's grilling of Pete Buttigieg?
No.
It was hysterical. So Massey's, who's a congressman from Kentucky, says, you know, when he went to MIT, he says, the average American household has 17% of their energy go for air conditioning. It's 1,800 kilowatts an hour. Whole country, that's the average. He said, if they get an electric car, they're going to use four times as much energy just for their electric car as they currently now spend on air conditioning, which means their entire electrical bill for their whole household will double. Now, is the country preparing for all the households in America to double their electricity use? Is that reasonable? Because why are you trying to get them to buy electric cars under the circumstance? It was, and Buttigieg's answer was basically, America's great. We're up to the task. We can do it. And Massey's looking at him like, well, he said, that's political science. I'm interested in engineering. It was pretty funny. Yeah, it was pretty funny. So we've had Frank Nicely on the Salier Report a couple times, and you're the person, you and Pete Kennedy are the people who put me on to Frank Nicely. Senator Nicely is an example of absolutely excellent leadership. We've done a couple of interviews, and we did that. We published that great interview you did in The Money Changer, where he really gets into some of the legislative changes he made and why they're so valuable. Like a farmer being able to process 20,000 chicken on the farm.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so you know, that's the difference between a business and going out of business. Anyway, but one of the things that has astonished me is you see someone like a Frank Nicely who is so excellent. He's so intelligent. He's so capable. He's really gets legislation through. He gets things done. We have great leaders like Frank Nicely. Every state has them.
Yes.
Why are we all running around looking at people promoted by the media instead of finding Frank Nicely? You know, if a third of the people of Tennessee said, Frank, we'll support you no matter what you do. Tell us what to do. Can you imagine what the world would be like?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Frank is one of those people who has vision and insight. He strategically takes in a situation and understands it. And then not only does he understand it, he can explain it to you, and he can explain what we need to do and why we need to do it. Right. And there are a lot of, every state legislature has people like that. I mean, sure, they've got slugs too. I know that, but every legislature has people like that. All you have to do is find them.
Right.
Just have to find them.
So I will tell everybody here, whether it's, you know, take a look at what Franklin has created in terms of what you ask your state legislator for, but also take a look at, find those great leaders, both in your, you know, locally and in your state legislator, and simply say to them, what can I do to help? If you have a great local sheriff, say to them, what can I do to help? Forget the presidential election. It's a complete waste of your time. You know, find the people who can help you. And then whether it's energy, food, or rebuilding the financial system, and gold and silver has a really big role to play. That's what we're all going to have to do, because if we don't, we will not have the conditions we need to have sovereignty. And if you look at what the federal government's planning, they're planning slavery. So don't tell me you can't do it because you have no choice. We have to do this.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody's looking at central bank digital currencies. Everybody is going to come to a solution, to a point, if they get central bank digital currencies, where that person will have to ask themselves, am I going to stay in that system or stay out of that system? If they want to call it a black market outside where I use gold and silver, that's fine. But if you stay in that system, they're going to have control of your wealth and your life. It's just that simple. I mean, there won't be any other way around it except to go black market.
Right.
Right. So in a sense, it's a good thing because it's forcing people to make a decision.
Right. But I'm with you. I don't think you can do this by yourself. I mean, I've struggled for decades to try and do more for myself, and it's hard work. You know, civilization is really necessary if we're going to enjoy a comfortable way of life. And I know how hard you and your family have worked to build the farm and build the newsletter, build the dealership. It's hard work.
Right.
So the more people who are willing to get in there, and if we can get the states to provide the infrastructure we need so that we have a transaction grid that is lawful, I mean, that's really what this is about.
Yeah.
We're dealing with a federal government that's not in compliance with the law.
Right.
And if we're going to have a healthy economy, wanted to mention to you, I think I sent it to you. Did you see that poll that said 35% of small businesses were not able to meet their full June rent?
We're not able to meet what? Sorry.
Their full June rent.
Oh, yes.
35%, and 51% indicated they didn't think they'd be in business in 6 months.
Well,
now, you've been talking about the economy falling off a cliff. That is the cliff.
Right, because they make most of the jobs.
They make most of the jobs. And if you look at the latest Gallup poll, they've surpassed the military. Small businesses surpassed the military as the most admired people.
Hmm. Well.
Exactly. Okay, Franklin. Well, anything else you want to say about the materials? I would really encourage everybody to go to the web presentation and check them all out. There's wealth there. There are two more things I want to do before we close. One is I want you to go through the Money Changers 10 Commandments for buying gold and silver, because we can't hear that too many times.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, let me just get it up in front of me.
I'll read it off to you. So I have to disagree about the first one, though, because you say always take delivery. I do believe in using depositories, because you can't be in every jurisdiction.
I never started even thinking about depositories until about 2010. And right. The reason, and I'll tell you the reason, because I knew so many cases where there'd be some big splashy dealer advertising right. in the Wall Street Journal or something. He says, buy them from us. They're cheaper. We'll sell you Krugerrands $15 cheaper than anybody else in the country. Well, the reason was because he was supposedly storing them, but he wasn't actually undergoing the expense of buying them. So that's the reason I say, you know, always take delivery.
You know, I go crazy. People keep sending me these websites and say, you know, is this a reliable service? And you go to the website, you can't tell who owns it. You can't tell who governs it. You can't tell who manages it. You can't tell where they are. You can't see what their financials are. I was like, why are you even asking me this question? I don't get it. Okay, so take delivery or make sure you have a great custodian. Okay, number two.
Let me go back to that just a minute.
Okay.
Another way of saying that is don't buy paper gold.
Right.
The gold ETFs, silver ETFs, that's not silver and gold. That's paper.
And it's a bank IOU priced in gold and silver.
Right.
That's what that is. Right.
Okay. So never buy premium. Premium is what you pay above the melt value of an item. You know, I call me a Walmart mentality. I don't care. But the cheapest coin on the market is a Austrian 100 Corona.
Right.
And the thing is about, you know, it's at wholesale, it's got about a 1% premium over its melt value. It'll never go any lower than what it is on the bid side. Never go any lower. Why would I buy American Eagles and pay 5.25% at
so I'm the one who always breaks this rule, because I love 1 ounce coins. If I can have everything in 1 ounce coins, then I know how much I have. And other than the exception is 90% silver. As you know, I love 90% silver. Yeah. But away from 90% silver, aka junk silver, I like having 1 ounce coin so I don't get confused.
Yeah. Well,
so I break that rule. That's my reason for breaking it.
Well, I understand breaking it for that reason. And you know, people, regardless of what I say, people have to buy what they're comfortable with.
Right. Right.
You know. So the third one is buy bullion for business, numismatics for fun. There used to be, and there still are, these sales organizations where they have a lot of salesmen and they're selling gold and silver, and they sell stuff that has a very high premium. And people, because they sort of price things in furlongs per fortnight, you know, so nobody knows how much gold and what there is in something and what they're paying for it. So what I tell people, look, it's simple. Divide the cost by the content, and that'll tell you what you're paying per ounce.
Right. So I think the only reason to buy numismatics for fun is if you think it's fun to lose money. Okay. So buy silver first, then gold.
Silver is the most usable. as we observed, because it's a smaller city. So you could use it. If you have to, you can use it. And secondly, I think silver will rise much faster than gold. And the reason I say that is it's a smaller market. And when both gold and silver are always in a bull market together, and silver is going to rise faster. At the peak of the bull market in 1967 and 1980, the ratio went below 16 to 1. Now it's 90 to 1 today. So you're going to make more money.
Absolutely. So buy small gold first, then large.
That's sort of the same logic as buying silver first. Fractional gold coins often and usually do have a larger markup premium than 1 ounce coins, but I still want to have some for the liquidity of it.
Right, right. Never buy exotic coins or modern rarities or anything you don't understand.
I'm laughing. It's not funny, but there's so many times that people call me up and they say, "Hey, I got this such and such and such," and I have to be the one to tell them, "Listen, you know, you paid $150 for that, and it's actually worth $50 now." And I don't like to do that. So, right. You know, it's in any kind of investment, you should never buy an investment that you don't understand. Never, ever buy an investment.
I agree. I totally
agree. If you can't explain it to somebody, to your wife, you don't understand it. You know, it's just that.
Know your dealer.
This may be the most important one on there, because you're trusting this person with a decision about your future, and you're trusting him with your money. And so you need to know that this person is honest. Like, you know, you said something, it's probably been 10 or 12 years ago. You said something to me, you know, you said that we're in a world where you have to be able to trust somebody. And the only way you can trust them is if you know you can trust them with your life. And I'm not going to trust anybody else. I've thought about that over and over. And you know, I look at people and I say, would I trust you with my life?
Right.
And that's the level of trust that you have, that really you have to have in them.
Yeah.
So and the best way, you know, check your dealer out, check them out with the Better Business Bureau, people like that.
I had the most wonderful subscriber who was Jewish, very devout Jewish. And I don't know who it was. She got into a squabble with one of your sons on scripture. They had a disagreement about the interpretation of scripture that apparently got really intense. And she called me and said, you know, I want to complain about, you know, these people are really fervent Christians. And she said, you know, why'd you recommend them to you? And I said, because you can trust them with your money. And there was a long, because they are devout Christians. And she's there long. And she said, you know, you're right. She said, I withdraw my complaint. It was funny. I don't know. I can't even remember what it was about, but they really got into it. It's pretty funny. Very passionate. Anyway, what governments can't find, they can't steal.
Right. This is one of the reasons why we tell people, listen, when you buy gold or silver, you get it and store it in a place where it's safe and you have 24/7 access.
Right. Right.
And if you go back to 1934 when they supposedly confiscated gold.
They just took the gold that was at the banks. They didn't take the gold.
That's right. That's exactly
everybody kept their gold at home.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Never swap bullion coins for U.S. $20 gold pieces.
Well, that's another version of number three. If you're going to swap anything, I mean, there's times that we can make swaps and really make a lot of ounces by doing it. Let me give you an example. Like right now, silver dollars, which is a 1 ounce silver coin minted before 34, have a huge premium on them. And I've had customers call me up and they say, hey, I've got 250 of these silver dollars. And we swap those for, even with high premium stay, we swap them for 1 ounce silver rounds. And they wind up with 30 or 40% more silver.
Wow.
So that's the kind of swap I'm in favor of. I don't want to go back the other way.
Right.
I don't want to give up a lot of.
You're always trying to get more silver or gold at melt value.
Right.
You give the coin no value. You're talking about buying the metal.
Right.
That's it. Okay. Right. And this is my favorite one. Never break the law.
Well,
I can't tell you the first time a client said to me, oh, well, you know, I'm going to sell these because I don't have to pay taxes on them. And I said, are you telling me that you just told the NSA that you're going to break the law? He said, what are you talking about? I said, speaking to the microphone.
That's great. Well, it's true. You know, that the main thing is they have been told by these people who sell overpriced gold and silver that you don't want a paper trail. You don't want a paper trail. You don't want a paper trail. And they got these people all twittery about these paper trails. Look, it's my money. I can do with it what I want to do. And right. I don't care about a paper trail. So I, you know, so that what the place that they get to with that is they want to pay in cash. Well, you know, the cash reporting laws say if you pay more than $10,000, it's got to be reported.
Right.
And, you know, they're I'm not going to break the law for you. Right. So don't ask me to do it.
Well, here's the thing. You and I have litigated up against the federal government for a long, long time. And what you know, it really pays not to break the law.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah.
If you don't break the law, even if they try and make up that you broke the law, they can't.
Yeah. Well, right. You know, one of the things a friend told me was, and I've been through trials and you've been through trials too. I'm talking about court trials in court.
Right.
He said, you have to keep a clear conscience because that when you're up on a witness stand, it recreates in your mind the judgment seat of God.
Right.
And if there's guilt in there, if you've hidden up some, you've broken the law some way, it's going to show.
Right.
It's going to show. And I, you know, I always think about that and it comes back to my mind. And I think he's right about that. I really do.
Right. Okay. Gold and silver defending family wealth and sovereignty for 5,000 years. There is a way forward, but we have to do it.
Right.
What Franklin has put together, just a treasure chest of resources to help you go do it. And I want to thank you, Franklin, because I know it's the wisdom of decades of hard work trying to make a pathway for all of us. And anyway, so it's a real treasure chest, and I hope everyone here takes advantage of it. And you put a fire under your state legislature because we got to get going.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Thanks for asking me to do it. It okay. really was my pleasure. You stirred me up to do better than I did, better than I knew.
Okay. Give my love to everybody in Tennessee, Franklin. You have a wonderful day. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the second quarter 2022 equity overview. Our theme, gold and silver, defending family wealth and sovereignty for 5,000 years. We hope it helps defend yours. Good evening.
Good evening. Thanks.
Thanks, Franklin.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it very much.